Sheriff, this is no time to panic.
This is the perfect time to panic!
I'm Steve Benson.
And I'm Paul Schultz.
And this is the Don't Panic Radio Show. Sit back, relax, and ignore the news, because nothing you're about to hear is true. Hey man, let's have another show. What do you say?
Let's do this.
Let's light this candle.
This is what old men do on Friday nights.
Yeah. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah. Old men do it too, I guess. I'm told. Yeah.
All right. Before we get too far into this, we have the inadvertent question of the week, which we haven't done in a long time. So we're going to do it. And it's the inadvertent question of the week because I asked it earlier in the week and we got a lot of answers. So I put it on the page. I hashtag put it on the page.
That's a movement.
Just a few minutes ago. And it is, why do elementary kids need to memorize U.S. state capitals? Go. It's an interesting one to me because we talk a lot about school and education on this show.
Mm-hmm.
And when my daughter asked me the other day, Babby, she calls me Babby.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we have to memorize state capitals? So I came up with an answer, which was something like, well, you know, it gives you an idea. It's not really the capital itself. It helps you understand all of the different states and like the main cities in those states and what the people like, you know, when you leave school and like you're out in the world, you're talking to people from different places, you kind of get a feel for what their life is like or what their, I don't know.
Yes.
Ask your mother.
Go ask your mother. Anytime the parent starts the answer with, well, that's the stall.
Buy
as
in
they
time.
Try to think. Buy in time.
All right. Well, thanks for listening this week. Today, depending on when you're listening. It's Friday night. We normally record on Wednesday night,
mm-hmm.
but I had a few bouts with mental illness and then family just stuff happening.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are on Friday night because we are like that. We are workmen-like.
That's right.
And so it's Friday night, so it might get a little crazy.
Dedicated craftsmen.
That's right. But we're both caught up on Black Lightning, so we'll give a little Black Lightning talk for you guys. Uh-huh. And we'll do another thing. This is like the old school throwback episode because we're going to do, not only are we doing Question of the Week, we're also going to do headlines.
I might still have the theme song floating around here somewhere.
Headlines, check it and see. And I picked at least one headline that is going to take us way back, like into the double digit episodes. So we'll see how that goes.
Only Superfan James will know the answer to this headline.
He's like, single digits. He's like, I'm about single digits. So how's your week been, other than me missing the recording time?
Been watching a lot of movies and a lot of TV and, you know, because normally, you know, like we were saying, we record on Wednesday nights. So I get the message, you're not up to it. I'm like, well, I guess I got to find something to watch on TV because, you know, I've got myself going in that direction.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been kind of nice. It's, you know.
So one of the movies you watched, you put a picture of it on mm-hmm. on the social media site
yes.
that we're both members of.
Yes.
And
Facebook.
I'm tired of giving them free advertising. I think, you know, come on. What's his name? Zuckerberg?
Zuckerberg.
Just pay us for the publicity. I mean,
that's right. We're helping them for free. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And you know we're responsible for some fraction of their success.
Yeah.
You know, we drive listeners to their website.
By the dozen.
Or even the half dozen.
That's right.
Mm. So you put that, you did this thing where you put this picture on the Facebook and you're like, oh, one of my old favorites. And I'm looking at it and I'm like, I get why it's one of your favorites. It looks like some women with beehive hairdos or something, bouffant, like 1960s era women, 50s maybe. It's color, so it's probably 60s.
It was a pretty grainy photograph, I gotta admit. I, you know, I could have just went to the Google and grabbed an image and put it on there, but I like, you know, I like living in the now, so I just quick took a picture of the screen. And yeah, it loses a little bit of resolution there, but
well, not only that, but it's a movie that I've probably not seen.
I'm sure you've seen it.
And so these women, I just took your picture.
No.
So these women are hiding behind some rocks or something.
Yes.
And
you're half right.
And I'm like, I don't know what this is. And you didn't say what it was. And so it's the equivalent of walking in like you walk into a room, you walk up to somebody you know who clearly doesn't recognize you, and you go, do you know who I am? Do you recognize me? Huh? You remember me? Huh? You don't remember me, do you? So I'm like, you can either tell me what it is, or you can try to make me look like an asshole for not knowing what it is, or you yourself can look somewhat like an asshole for being like, this is one of my favorites, but nobody has heard of it, and they don't know what it is.
Yeah, go the elitist route. I'll pick some strange foreign film
right.
No one has seen.
Got to play the elitist card.
No, but like I said, that's part in the post. That's part when you're like, what movie is it? I'm like, that's the game. You know, it's like your unintentional headline of the week, or headline of the week. And minus, it's the unintentional game. It's like, there's no rule. You just got to play by the rule.
How do you win? You win by winning. The winner will be the one who wins.
And what's funny is the picture I took, if I would have waited about 30 seconds more, it would have been ridiculously obvious what the movie was.
Oh.
Yeah.
It was Barbarossa, right?
No.
Oh, it was, I thought I'd go.
It was Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Really?
Yeah, it's the scene when the mom from The Christmas Story and Richard Dreyfuss are up in the mountains while everything's going on down below. They're hiding, trying to see what's going on.
Oh.
And eventually he gets the courage to go down there and she stays behind. And you know what's crazy? The mom from The Christmas Story? Dude, she had a banging body. This is only a couple years before Christmas Story. And she's not really that old. She's like middle-aged, I guess, in Christmas Story. You know? And still look pretty held together for a Midwestern mom, you know? But she's running around in booty shorts and stuff. And I'm just like, wow. The mom from The Christmas Story is pretty hot. But yeah, I like to think... I absolutely love... Close Encounters of the Third Kind, because I like to consider it the spiritual sequel to 2001 in a weird kind of way. Because, you know, 2001 ends with the Star Child coming to Earth and trying to figure out what to do with his powers.
Yeah.
And Close Encounters is aliens finally making contact with Earth. And dropping off, like returning the stuff they've taken, because they took battleships and planes and people and all this stuff over the years for research purposes, and finally turned, you know, released them to, you know, back into the wild. But I don't know, there's something about those two movies that to me they almost resonate on the same level. And also like 2001 Space Odyssey, those two movies, and especially, you know, the book, we've talked about the book for 2001, I seriously think that if something like that were to happen, they would go down exactly like that. Steven Spielberg, I forget who wrote Close Encounters. Maybe he did. I don't know. But he hit on a general feeling of what I think it would be like if the aliens came down. How the Earth would handle it and how it would feel. And I thought it was great that he leaves it where you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
I didn't want to do a 40-year spoiler. You know, he leaves it open for, well, what happens next, which I remember as a kid seeing and hating it, because I'm like, oh, the aliens show up in the last 2 minutes of the movie and we don't get to see anything. But as I got older and my taste matured, I realized, oh, he did the same thing in Jaws. You know, the sharks under the water scaring the shit out of you.
Right.
So it's what you don't see. Your imagination takes over. And 2001 is kind of the same way. I think that this is exactly how it would be if the aliens were to land during prehistoric times and change the face of, you know, alter humanity, you know, give us a little nudge. And if you ever get around to it, I don't want to get too far off base. If you ever get around to reading the rest of the books in the Space Odyssey series, I recommend them. They're good. They don't come close to the first one, but they're really good. But the ending of the fourth book, which is the last book in the series, that is exactly how I imagine how I imagine it would end for the final connection between humans and extraterrestrials.
So not like Mars Attacks.
Well, there again, yeah, I could see that going completely that way. I like to keep my options open. The thing I loved about Mars Attacks was at the end, you know, all the kids are making the rules and they're making stupid ass rules just like adults do. It's like, oh, they're not even going to be any good if we leave them in charge.
I'm taking pictures of you.
We'll hashtag put it on the page.
Put it on the page. Good deal, man.
All right. Anyway, that's my rant on that's at last. You now know what movie that was.
Yeah, I didn't even guess it. Nobody guessed it.
Well, yeah, actually, my friend Adam did. He did?
He
figured it out right away. But no, if you haven't seen it, if people go see it because it's playing in theaters. Rent it, stream it, download it, buy it, whatever. The thing I love about Spielberg, I don't necessarily like all of his movies, but the thing I like about Spielberg from, like, say, Duel to Jaws to Schindler's List to Close Encounters to even his co-directing stuff on the Indiana Jones movies, he has the ability to put you, the audience, right smack where he wants you the whole time. You feel like Brody in Jaws. You feel like Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters. You're right where he wants you to be the whole time. You feel like Dennis Weaver in Duel being chased by the killer truck. You just, he can hold you right where he wants you. That's talent.
Superfan James shall never again say you don't talk enough.
That's right. If I had a mic, I'd drop it.
Did you black out? Because, man, the last 12 minutes were podcast gold, man.
You get me going on movies, and I'll go all night.
Nice.
My refractory period between movies is pretty tight, so.
Well, as we were discussing before we went on the air, that would have come in handy for me in college. Okay, well, we'll get back to TVs, movies, and stuff in a little bit. But first, let's do something we haven't done in a while.
What's that?
Let's do headlines.
We interrupt our program to bring you this important message. I love you. Now, back to our show.
All right. I went to two different sources this time.
Okay.
I went to Maxim.
Always a credible news source.
For the first two.
Okay.
And I went to the Journal of Nature for the third one.
Hmm.
All right. So this one's from Maxim. Kristen Wiig will play supervillain Cheetah in Wonder Woman 2.
Dude, I read that this morning and I ran in and told my son and he's like, who? I'm like, oh yeah, you don't watch Saturday Night Live. You've never seen any of, because her movies are more adult, you know.
Yeah.
So I had to explain to him. Apparently she did some voice work on the How to Train Your Dragon movies. I'm totally excited.
I only remember two things about that headline.
Hmm.
Kristen Wiig.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder Woman 2. And I can get excited about either of those two things.
Yeah. I think she's awesome.
And you know what's great about Kristen Wiig?
Hmm.
She's not a sex symbol, but she can be sexy, right?
I mean, yeah. That's what makes her fucking sexy, dude.
But what I love, she's like Tina Fey in that I have to go, oh yeah, that's right, she's sexy, right? Because she's so funny. And so it's how women must think about Tom Selleck, right? Because he's such a great actor that you can just get lost in his acting. And you can just go, wow, this guy, he could be Hamlet and Shakespeare, or he could be he's like what's his name? Robert Altman, right? He could play anything. He could read the phone book and you'd be like, oh my God, this guy can act, right? But then you go, yeah, but those red shorts, right?
He's they were also, some tight shorts.
He's not just a great actor, but he's also sexy. Apparently, that's what the women say. So Kristen Wiig, Tina Fey, same way. You go, wow, they're funny. I could laugh. They just make me laugh. And then they'll do some scene where they're supposed to be sexy, and you go, oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. She's sexy, too.
Well, now, I'll give you a full disclosure.
Yeah.
Since we're being so honest.
Are we?
Yes. I almost agree with you on that, but the problem with me is, like, funny equals sexy for me.
Now,
Because funny for me is a direct link to intelligence.
Oh.
And intelligence to me is all it takes.
Is that why you're always coming on to me?
Yes. Since we're being so brutally honest on the show.
So do you find me physically attractive or not?
You look marvelous.
No, when I say sexy, I guess I'm not talking about great, wonderful. You just like punched your pussy card, all right? All the women are going,
you just
oh, that...
unpunched. You just the... unpunched my pussy card.
The women are like, all the women listeners are like, oh, that Paul, he is so sensitive, isn't he? He's just a great guy. Steve's a pig.
You found a hanging Chad on my pussy card and pushed it back up inside like a hernia. Just poof, right up back inside there.
I just, look, man. I was talking about physical sexy, like just physical attractiveness, okay? I mean, by your standard, Melissa McCarthy should be a centerfold in Playboy, all right? But she's not, because there's a certain standard of physical attractiveness that I was talking about. Yes, being funny, being intelligent, yeah, fine, all right?
Except I don't find Melissa McCarthy that funny, so.
Because she's fat, right?
No, she's just not funny.
Name one fat woman who you think's funny.
Oh, let's see. Who's fat? A fat woman who's funny.
I'm waiting. All the women on the, all our women listeners, they're also waiting. We're talking about a real woman with curves, man. Name one real woman with curves who's funny.
Who's the chick from King of Queens? She's funny and she's fat. Who's the chick from Eastbound and Down? She's fat. She's funny.
I love that you can't think of their names. And you're calling them chicks. It's like you're all feminists and stuff. Hey, well, Steve, I think Alistair, I think that funny equals sexy. And you know, funny is a sign of intelligence. And that's what I find sexy. I find intelligence and humor to be sexy. Okay, name one fat girl who's funny. Well, there was that chick from that show that one time. She said something funny.
Actually,
right?
I think they're the same girl. I would have to Google it. And believe me, never mind. I Googled it a couple times to them.
Now back to my original point. Kristen Wiig, Tina Fey.
Yes.
They're so funny and such good performers that I forget about their physical attractiveness until it like comes up, right? So I'm looking at the Kristen Wiig playing Cheetah. I imagine supervillain Cheetah probably wears tight outfits.
Yeah, and Cheetah and print outfits, yeah.
Probably moves like a cheetah, which is a sultry sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So my only issue with that whole thing is she playing this cheetah person because it's going to be a funny role? Or is she playing this cheetah person because she's trying to make the transition from funny to physical sex symbol?
That's a good question. I don't know. I completely trust. What the fuck is the director's name? I don't blank out on her name.
Gal Gadot.
No, that's Wonder Woman.
Oh. It is a woman.
Yeah.
All right.
She directed Monster.
Yeah. She's awesome too. Probably fat.
No, she's pretty good looking. Not that they can't.
Dude, I was taking a drink of my drink. Y'all ain't fat. Y'all just big bone. When I say fat, I mean like, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500, 700, 800, 900 pounds. I'm not fat. I'm voluptuous.
Patty Jenkins. Okay. Blue. I don't know, but I completely trust Patty Jenkins as a director.
Dude, you're killing me over here.
You know, she probably got paid nothing. I'm willing to bet when she signed on to do Wonder Woman, Warner Brothers had zero faith in it and probably paid her shit and gave her a back end deal. And now she's like.
How many different women's issues are you going to try to fit into one statement? She's not paid as much as men. She got a back end deal from
Harvey Weinstein.
From Harvey Weinstein.
We should record on Fridays more often, apparently.
I don't know if you're trying to come back from your. She's not fat. She's actually good looking.
Dude, I never come back once I'm out there.
All right, so that's one headline. Next headline. Maybe you've heard about this. Just slight background. I know it's against the rules. But apparently, Kim Jong-un asked Donald Trump to meet with him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump is like saying, yeah, okay, let's meet. Right? Dennis Rodman supports a U.S. summit with his buddy, North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. So the worm thinks that Rocket Man should meet with his orangeness.
What? Where did you get that one? 'Cause
Maxim.
Oh, okay. I'm glad Dennis Rodman weighed in on this.
Yeah, I mean... Well, you know, a few years back, Dennis Rodman actually went over there and hung out with Kim Jong-un. And he said, uh-huh. They hate us because they ain't us. Well, if you think about it, Dennis Rodman and Donald Trump have a lot in common.
Mm-hmm. They both have sex with adult film stars.
Yes.
I don't know if Dennis Rodman tries to cover it up though or not.
Unnatural hair color.
Oh, there's that.
Tall.
Physically fit. Human physically perfection. Fit.
Oh man. Well, I for one think it's wonderful. The head of two nuclear powers getting together to talk through their differences.
Stable, level-headed.
Yeah, two stable, level-headed men with their fingers on the button. I'll have the best meeting with Kim Jong-un that any U.S. president has ever had with any other dictator ever. We will have peace in our time. We'll have such a fantastic peace. Things will be so peaceful. It'll be fantastic. It'll be the best peace ever. It'll be better peace than anyone else has ever. It'll be a better peace than that Kristen Wiig from Saturday Night Live. Although I heard she gained a few pounds, so she might be fat and not good looking anymore. So I don't know if I would impregnate her now, like I would my daughter.
And tomorrow's Twitter headlines will be Donald Trump. Steve Vincent's impression of me terrible. No talent. No talent. Terrible.
Yeah, no talent. Sad. Hashtag sad.
Sad.
That's just sad. This loser from Indianapolis.
As this vice president's like, what about Indianapolis?
Miss Trump, I'm from Indianapolis. I didn't know that, Mike. I did not know you were from Indianapolis. Miss Trump, I was the governor of Indiana. I did not know that. Could you please go have a meeting with my daughter and let her know that you were the governor of Indiana? Miss Trump, I'll have to bring my wife with me because I cannot be in a meeting with a woman unless my wife's there. Oh, I know what you mean. You want a threesome. Suddenly Trump now has a southern accent. I don't know how that happened. Anyway. No, I think it's good. I think Kim Jong-un, Donald Trump, they're going to get together, work out their differences, get it all figured out. World will be safer. Hawaii doesn't have to, worry about bomb drills anymore and all that kind of thing. All right, we'll do the third headline after the break because I think you're going to have a lot to say about this one.
It's not about fat chicks, is it?
It is not about fat chicks. Look, everybody, just so you know, we try to be funny on this show. We're just trying to help you forget your problems, okay?
That's right.
We're trying to help you ignore the news and realize things aren't as bad as they might seem. Paul loves women with curves, like real women with curves. He finds them incredibly sexy. He didn't mean what he said earlier.
Only if they're smart, though.
Now, if you're not smart, he would prefer that you be more skinny, right? I think that's what you're saying. I'm just trying to help.
I think before you help me anymore, we might want to go to break.
All right, let's go to break.
I'm looking for Ain't it bugging up?
Welcome back. As promised, we're going to do a third headline before we get into some Black Lightning. This one comes from the journal Nature, which if you just go nature.com, it'll take you to this journal and not to pictures of people at nudist camps.
Or like back in the day when you would look up naked Aborigines.
Yeah. That's all we had, man. We had to, oh, dude, I got this National Geographic that we can look at. It's like, damn, why do her titties look like hound dog ears?
they can hear shit a mile away.
All right, so here's the headline from March 7th, 2018. Human hippocampal neurogenesis drops sharply in children to undetectable levels in adults. I read that headline and I was like, words, more words.
See, I heard that headline and immediately thought Beckler.
Hippo.
Uh-oh.
Hang on. I probably ought to get this.
Hang on. It's one of those nights.
Hold on. I probably ought to get this. Hold on.
All right.
Hello. Hey. Yeah. Who is this? We mean who it is. This is 130,000-year-old Mastodon. Oh, dude. 130,000-year-old Mastodon. You haven't called in a while. I know. I've been busy. What is a 130,000-year-old Mastodon get busy doing? Well, you know, beside the obvious, you know, just getting busy. I've been up in human history, and I thought I'd call in for two reasons. Yeah, one, you just started talking about hippos, and I don't know if you knew it, but hippos are a distant relative of the mastodon.
he's a rabid listener.
I'm not sure we were talking about hippos. Yeah, you were talking about a hippocampalist. There is a hippocampalist, and that's my cousin. My cousin, hippocampalist, and she's, yeah, I don't know if you're looking to date right now. I'm married. Paul may be looking to date. Hey, Paul, I heard you like them, you know, a little bit on the plump side. Well, my cousin, hippocampalist.
Is she smart?
Yeah, she's smart and funny as hell.
All right, then. Give her. I'll send her my Tinder profile.
All right. Tinder. That's what y'all humans start fire with that, right? I think you're thinking of a different kind of Tinder. 130,000-year-old man. I know what Tinder is. I'm trying to make a joke. Trying to be funny. Unlike y'all talking about fat women being, Not funny. That's not at all what we were talking about. Anyway, you, Paul, I send you a number. You call my cousin, Hippocampus. All right. Thank you for that, Paul. Maybe we'll get an update in a future show about you better treat her right, too. Because Hippocampus will make you suffer if you don't treat her right. And then I'll come beat your ass. All right. Well, you said there were two things. What was the second thing? Yeah. Y'all was talking a few weeks ago about, what was y'all talking about? I don't know. We talk about a lot of it. Y'all was talking, I don't know. Y'all was talking something about germs and steel and Native Americans and shit like that.
I thought for sure he would have called in during that.
I was busy. I told you I was busy getting busy. All right. Hippocampus, my cousin Hippocampus, got a friend, Hippopotamus.
Well, that's kind of right on the nose.
She got big nose. How do you know that?
Well, hippos usually do. Anyway, what about
y'all said, here's what's wrong with what y'all said. Y'all said peoples came to North America 20 some thousand years ago.
Yeah, that's the archaeological evidence.
I don't give a damn about y'all's archaeological evidence. I was here 130,000 years ago, and y'all's cousins was also here.
I don't understand. I'm not even sure what's going on. How do you know? How do you know it was my cousin?
Because he had a big head, and he thought he was funny. That's why he had one of those stupid little stone things that he was trying to kill my cousins with.
You got a lot of cousins.
You know we got a lot of cousins. Everybody's our cousin. Ooh, you know that.
That's kind of racist.
Where'd you go to high school at?
Well, you know, I grew up in Michigan City, and I went to... You go to Elston? No, I went to Rogers.
Oh, that white kid school.
Yeah, but I went... For junior high, I went to Krieger.
Oh. Krieger.
Even the Mastodon.
That's next door to the projects.
It's like, yeah, next door to the projects. I can't remember the name of it. Don't
need no name. Them projects, just the projects. Every other project's got their name from that project.
They were the what is it? They're a Project Zero.
That's right, Project Zero. 130,000 years ago, back in my day, I'm a mastodon. I got a lot of cousins who are mastodons. They wouldn't go anywhere near them projects. Know what I'm saying? You go near them projects, you end up on somebody's dinner plate.
It's a very big plate. Or on the side of Fred Flintstone's car.
That's right. That man had a big old rack of ribs.
All right, well, we got a show to do, 130,000-year-old mastodon. So any last thoughts?
Yeah, I would say your super fan, James, he's my favorite one of your fans.
Well, you know, he's kind of our favorite, too.
Yeah. You lose him, you lose me.
Wow, that sounds like an ultimatum.
That's a threat. Yeah.
It sounds like a threat.
Yeah, I like that boy.
All right, well, we're going to keep going with the show, if you don't mind.
Yeah, y'all keep going with the show, saying your funny shit.
All right. Well, bye, super fan mastodon. Will you call me super fan mastodon?
All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I've said this before, and I'll say it again. You're gonna make some therapist a career.
I miss that guy. That's 130,000-year-old mastodon. I kind of miss him, don't you? So, that misinterpretation aside, and Hippocampus or whatever his cousin's name is. Good luck with the two of you. I hope something comes of it. But what is this headline actually trying to say?
What? Read it again, just so I can have it in my head. I was laughing quite uproariously.
Human hippocampal neurogenesis drops sharply in children to undetectable levels in adults.
Here's what I know about the hippocampus. the hippocampus kicks in full gear about the age of 10. God, I don't know how to, where to fucking go with this. I had it all before the fucking Mastodon called. I had the whole, because I've talked at length about this with my therapist about how the hippocampus works.
I'm just, nope, hanging up on him. Sorry. Keep going.
It'll go to voicemail. It is interesting, though, because the way the hippocampus works is, because the thing I tell my therapist is like how I always, it was weird. I always talk about how I feel like I'm 10 years old. I feel like I'm 10 years old. I feel like I'm 10 years old when this happens. And she's like, that's interesting. You keep bringing up the age of 10, because the age of 10 is when your hippocampus is in full gear.
Hmm.
And then shortly thereafter, it kind of like closes the vault.
So let's explore this a minute. So the hippocampus, you're saying, is where, like, if you're 10 years old and I don't know, you're sent to Vietnam and you
yeah.
Charlie's in the bush, you know, whatever. That's where that trauma gets stored?
Yes.
Okay. Where is the hippocampus in the brain?
The up front.
Like near the frontal cortex or whatever. So if you I've looked into this a little bit. I don't know about the hippocampus, mm-hmm. but I do know crap that happens to you in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Like you learn survival mechanisms around
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that gets stored in your brain for use later in life, even though you don't need it yeah. later in life. Like your brain doesn't know, and maybe it's the hippocampus's fault. But your brain doesn't know you don't need that anymore. You don't mm-hmm. need to go to your room every time somebody yelling at somebody else
mm-hmm.
because they're not going to beat you, right?
Right.
Just because your parents, every time they started yelling at each other, ended up beating you and you learned they had to go to your room to survive, doesn't mean you got to do that now, right?
Right, right.
So that's the hippocampus you're saying.
Yes.
All right. So and that shuts down after the age of 10 at some point.
Well,
so
it's in full swing at the age of 10 and then it drops off, you know, afterwards.
So does that mean for my 10-year-old, any mistakes I've made up till now won't matter? It's what I do for the next, say, 8 or 9 months.
Yes.
So yeah, if I don't accidentally scare her or anything for 8 or 9 months, I'm in the clear.
You should be good.
All right.
There's actually a really good book I read. It was a children's book, and it was called Too Many Hippos.
Hmm.
And it was written about the time that my therapist and I started dealing with the hippocampus. She snuck in this book. She goes, "Hey, this is kind of cool. Read this." And it was a children's book, and I can't think of the artist's name that worked on it, but he's extremely famous for kids' books when we were little. And this book's called Too Many Hippos. And it was about how these hippos kept following this little boy around. And then one day the doctor shows up and he has a magic pill for the little boy. And he's like, if you take this little pill, it'll get rid of the hippos. So the parents are like, yes, take the pill. So the little kid takes the pill. And the next day, like, you turn the page, and the next day the kid's coming home and it's being followed by giraffes. And the book was written about the time that the first couple batches of really, like, popular medication started coming along. And the idea was, you know, medication, while I believe in better living through chemistry, the medication isn't always the answer. And there's always a side effect to the medication. It was Stephen Kellogg. That was the artist's name. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, you know, you got the hippocampus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Too many hippos. So how about a little lobotomy to take out a little piece of the hippocampus? And you'll feel better, you know, kind of that sort of dangerous. I heard an interview with somebody this week who was saying, you know, her goal in life is to find ways, you know, you talk about the amygdala. I've been reading about the amygdala, which is basically the lizard brain. It's this little almond shaped piece of brain near the brainstem. Yes. And it's the one that's responsible for the flight or fight mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the one that makes most decisions for us. And the thing that we think is rational thought making a decision is actually a rationalization of mm-hmm. a decision that was already made, right? Mm-hmm. So if you are walking down the street at night and a dude in a hoodie is walking toward you, and you decide to cross the street to the other side, then you notice that he's actually, you know, just some guy, right?
Right.
You're gonna start to go, well, I decided to go to the other side because, well, I mean, it's nighttime. Mm-hmm. There's been some crime. You know, I couldn't see his face. It's not that he had a hoodie. It's not that he's black. Of course not. It's just, you know, better safe than sorry. All of that is not why you made the decision. You made the decision because that little almond piece of brain, the right. lizard brain, perceived danger, right?
Right.
So the woman says, or it doesn't matter that she's a woman. She happened to be a woman. But anyway, she said, and maybe it's a little more surprising that it's a woman that said this. She was saying, like, a lot of the reason people don't go out and chase their dreams is because of that fear, because of that part of the brain is like afraid something really horrible is going to happen. Where if you think about it logically, you would go, well, the worst that could happen is I don't, you know, I fail. Yeah. And then if I fail, who cares? I'll try something else, right?
Right.
So she said one of her goals is to get that emotional piece of decision making out of the way. Like figure out a way to eliminate that. And I'm listening to that going, okay, hold on. Just hold on right there. Because she's going, well, just so we can get all our biases out of the way, all of our emotional biases, get all the preconceived notions of everything and just use only reason and logic to make decisions. I'm like, dude, I'm not sure if you really understand what you're saying. I mean, what makes us human at that point?
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Part of the human experience is we make bad decisions.
And some of those mad decisions pan out. If you're just going to use reason and logic, guess what you are? You're a sequence of zeros and ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
How bad off... It's funny you talk about that, because I've been thinking about this a lot lately. But it's like, you know, the fear of failure in an endeavor. You know, where's the real, unless you're losing money, like monumental amounts of money, or people are dying, why is failure so bad?
You know what I think? In some ways, when it comes to not pursuing your dreams, I don't know if it's fear of failure that gets in their way. And some people hate this phrase, but fear of success. And people hate the phrase because they go, oh, nobody's afraid of success. I mean, that's what you want, right? You want to be successful. Why would you be afraid?
Right.
And I mean it only in... So for example, I messaged you about this, and it's probably part of the reason I wasn't up to recording Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
As an introvert, you wouldn't be able to tell it, right? Mm-hmm. But my version of introvert doesn't mean I don't go out there and talk to people or that I don't love the sound of my own voice.
Mm-hmm.
It just means that before I've got to make myself go do it. And then after I'm done, I'm exhausted, right? So Tuesday night, as I messaged you, I went and I went to this networking event with the specific goal of getting more guests for my podcast and meeting people who influence stuff around Indianapolis in the life science industry, which I'm in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was hoping they would cancel the event. And then I was hoping, and then I was going, well, maybe I shouldn't go. Maybe there's reasons not to go. And it wasn't that I was afraid I would show up and not get these people to be on my podcast. I don't think. Mm-hmm. I think I was afraid they would say yes. And if they say yes, now I actually got to follow through on it.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And if I follow through on it and it's not good, that's one thing. But if it is good, now I got to go find more. Right? And
yeah.
And so that's kind of what I'm saying when I say fear of success is like, okay, so let's say you write this book, right? And you publish it. Mm-hmm. How scary is it that nobody reads it or that you can't find somebody to publish it? Why is that scary? It's not scary, right? It's just like no different than today. You don't have a book published. Mm-hmm. So you put a book out into the universe. Nobody reads it. Well, right. Nothing's changed, right? But if it hits, now millions of people are going to, hundreds of thousands of people are going to read your book.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them might not like it. Some of them might want you to write another one, mm-hmm. you know? So that's what I think it is.
Well, Elvis Costello said that you have your whole life to do your first album and 12 months to do your second album.
Mm-hmm.
And that fear, that plays right into that. It's like, well, I just made this great album. Everybody loved it. Or this great book. Everybody loved it. Now I have to do a follow-up. And that's where the whole sophomore jinx comes into play. And that's why typically the third movie is better than the second movie. The third book's better than the second book. But and that all plays into that person that created that has to deal with that success. And maybe those ones that do that, that get that shit off the ground, don't have that fear. And then they got to deal with it when it hits. You know, you don't have it going up to it, but when you're suddenly in it, you're like, oh shit. You know, now I got to do something else.
Well, it's interesting, and I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole because I'll start rambling. Mm-hmm. But there may be a comparison here. Seth Godin has a podcast now, and I was listening the other day, mm-hmm. and he was basically doing the whole do the work concept,
mm-hmm.
and he was like debunking the whole idea of writer's block. He's like, there's no such thing as writer's block, right? There's just somebody who's not willing to put bad ideas out on paper, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not that you don't have enough good ideas, it's that you don't have enough bad ideas. And he's like, as an example, he used Miles Davis. He's like, Miles Davis, you know, recorded Some Kind of Blue in like 72 hours, mm-hmm. right? And it was unbelievable. It's incredible. It's like, to this day, it's considered one of the best jazz albums of all time. Yeah,
and deservedly so.
Yeah. But Miles Davis recorded something like 40 or 50 mm-hmm. jazz albums, right? Mm-hmm. None of them nearly as good as Some Kind of Blue. But nobody remembers all those other ones, yeah. right? And so Miles Davis didn't look at it like, oh, I have writer's block. I mean, if he sat around and waited until Some Kind of Blue came along,
yeah,
we would never have had Some Kind of Blue.
Right.
So I love this line. Seth Godin's like, you never hear anybody say they have plumber's block. Like, a plumber never shows up to your house. There's a leaky faucet. And he goes, oh, sorry, today I just have plumber's block today. You know, I can't fix your sink because I just have plumber's block. No, he gets down on his knees, gets his wrench out and starts turning stuff. Right.
Plumber's block is what brought him to your house in the first place.
That's right. I got plumber's block. Get over here.
I think there's a little bit of a difference between a plumber and Miles Davis, but I get it. Do the work. Get it. You know, I had an English teacher in high school. He did a creative writing class with him, and he had this philosophy about what he called it, priming the pump. And he's like, if you don't have anything to write, write, I have nothing to write, over and over again. And sooner or later, something else will come out. And it's true, because I literally sat in his classroom and wrote that several times. And eventually, the brain starts moving again.
Well, it's true.
And it's not about like plumbing is the same as yeah. being Miles Davis. It's that it's the same ethic, right?
Yeah.
Isaac Asimov is another example he used. He published something like 400 books, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody asked him, like, how did you do that? And he said, well, it's actually not that complicated. I get up at 6:30 every morning. I have a manual typewriter. I sit down and I start typing. And I type until noon.
Yeah.
And I do that every day.
I'm trying to get into that mode. On the flip side of that, so does Stephen King.
Yeah.
Well,
the dude's a bazillionaire as a result.
Yeah, because he appeals to the lowest common denominator.
Whatever. Whatever, also, he's a bazillionaire. When you're a bazillionaire and you're writing like incredible, like profound, soul touching stuff, then you can go criticize Stephen King, right?
Maybe.
I mean he's Stephen King. He is a bazillionaire because he writes words people want to read.
Well, in defense of Mr. King, I will read anything he has written about writing, but I think his writing is very, 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 very bad. But like you said, he's made plenty of money doing it. Clearly he knows how to do it. So I'll read the books he writes on writing, but I won't read his books because he's terrible. REM. Okay, here's a good example. REM put out a couple of albums. They were great fucking albums. Okay. Then in 20 minutes they write Stand. Stand is their biggest hit ever. How does that happen? Where does that fall into this whole thing?
So I had a creative writing teacher, mm-hmm. professor, who said, how do you define, when it comes to art or popular art or, you know, entertainment, whatever, how do you mm-hmm. define what's good and what's not good, right? Mm-hmm. If you sell, and that's why, you know, I apologize. It's not personal. That's why I got a little bit emotional on the Stephen King thing. I don't read Stephen King. I don't think I've ever read a Stephen King book in my life.
And you're a better man for it.
Yeah.
Because I have.
But the one thing I do know is millions of people do. Or mm-hmm. REM. Millions of people love that song. And I'm like, well, I mean, who, what are you going for? You going to, if you want, I'm sure, well, look. Radiohead, I have a particular bone to pick with.
Okay.
Because they want to be all artsy and like, we do important work. You know, we're doing God's work. We're Radiohead, mm-hmm. right? Their most popular song ever is Creep, which yeah. I actually like that song, right? I listen to it a lot. They refuse to ever do it live again. Why? Because a lot of people like it. And I'm mm-hmm. like, dude, you're a performing artist. Your yeah. job as an artist is to please crowds, right?
Yep.
You refuse to do the one song that most people like.
Yep.
What are you doing? Why do you even do this?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
See, Warren Zevon had that problem. You ask anybody on the street, the only song by him they know.
Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
Well, that's because you know me. Werewolves of London. Boy. Werewolves of London was his
biggest hit. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that song.
He got to the point where he absolutely hated doing that song in concert. And he said the jinx of having a hit is you will then have to do that hit the rest of your career. So he would come up with interesting, clever ways of incorporating it into his live acts.
Now, see, I like that. That's fine with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, glad you love that song because it pays a lot of my bills.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little annoyed that you don't like the entire, you know, body of work and that's really why you're at this concert. So I'm not going to not play it just to honor the fact that you've given me a lot of your hard-earned money so I can live my life the way, you know, I can live my dream.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to not play it, but I'm still going to be an artist.
He got pissed one day. I've seen him numerous times, and he had put out this album, and the fans didn't really care for it. Well, I loved it, but the fans didn't really care for it. And as soon as he started playing music off of this album, fans were like getting up and going like to the bathroom and getting beer and stuff. He got so pissed. He's like, "Look, I don't want to be doing Werewolves of London in my golden years." You know, I have a whole bunch more. You know, he like went off. It was very inspiring.
Well, look, man. I mean, if our fans are like, I want to hear 90 minutes of 130,000-year-old Mastodon, right? That's all, we love that. That's all we want to hear. Well, you and I would have to have a serious conversation and go, first of all, I don't think my throat can handle it.
We'll get you a modulator.
But I guess, yeah, man, 30,000-year-old Mastodon, nah. But I'm conflicted because I would say on the one hand, it's like, give the people the air. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I would say, well, why haven't you done another thing or five other things? I mean, people don't go to Rolling Stone concerts and go, all I want to hear is Start Me Up. No, it's like they have a ton of songs that people want to hear. And it's like, keep making new songs that people want to hear, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Change the channel, Marge.
All right. Well, that was a fantastic discussion. We did have a Facebook question of the week, but we're kind of running out of time, and I did want to get to Black Lightning. So how about we talk about Black Lightning?
We pray at night for the helpless.
Pray at night.
Hoping you get us through breakfast. Wishing somebody come save us. Black Lightning's back, come to shock the haters.
Black Lightning's back. All right. So it's been a few weeks and a couple of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know where to start. A lot of action, a lot of intrigue. Like this Gambi character. I don't even know where to start. I don't even know what's going on with this guy.
Your brother talking about Gambi this morning. I'm like, oh, he's not far enough along yet. I don't want to say too much. he just started watching Black Lightning because of us. So yeah. He's like, I don't quite trust this Gambi character. And I'm like, oop. I don't want to say too much.
And what was it he said? Because he played some other...
He was in the Warriors, and he was in 48 Hours. And then, as my friend Jim McClain pointed out, and he shot and he killed the Phantom. He stabbed him in the back.
Who was he in the Warriors?
Oh, he was one of the Warriors. I don't know what his name was though.
Oh.
I can't. But what's funny is, as I pointed out, I'm like, man, Walter Hill must love the guy because he was in both. Both those movies are Walter Hill movies. And then that's when Jim McClane came in with the whole thing about the Phantom.
That's funny.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. I mean, part of me is going, hang on a second. You got this very black show with black people, wonderful, beautiful African-American gentlemen and ladies of color.
Mm.
What's this white dude doing? What's he up to? He's supposed to be like the Alfred, right?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be like Alfred or like Q.
He's super white on this show.
Yeah. And is this, let me ask you this, is this show following the comic book?
Well, that's the funny thing. The comic book has recently been, it's finally seeing the light of day again. It's in a 6-issue miniseries. I've been reading it. It's wonderful. Tony Isabella, the guy that created Black Lightning, is finally able to write it again. And what's crazy about it is I'm reading the comic, and there's a distinct difference between the comic book and the TV show.
Hmm.
And I had like, took that for granted as I was reading the comic, and then I turned the page, and there's, like, this, like, lizard alien guy. I'm like, oh, that's right. This is a comic book. This isn't the TV show. These characters are different.
My question is, like, you know, The Walking Dead, the storyline pretty much mirrors the graphic novel.
Yes. Hootie for Lootie. Yes. So I'm told.
So I guess what I'm asking is, does the storyline of Black Lightning, like, I know that Jefferson Pierce was a teacher in the comic and he's principal in the thing, but other than those little differences, I mean, is his daughter a superhero?
Yes. As I think the overall themes are the same. Okay. I mean, both of his girls in the comic have superpowers.
Okay, let me break it down. Do you know, because you've read the comics, do you know whether Gambi can be trusted or not? Do you know the answer? Don't answer the question, but do you know the answer?
I know the answer.
Okay. That's what I was asking.
Okay.
Because I'm sitting here going, I don't know, can I trust him? Can I not trust him? And I'm like, wow, people who've read the comic probably already know.
But you know? There's a distinct difference, though. A lot of people don't realize this. Because most people who experience superheroes experience them on the screen, okay?
Yeah.
Millions. Oh, Black Panther has, by the time this show is out, will have made $1 billion before it hit China. A friend of mine went to go see it. It was the first time he saw it. And he said people were walking out at when the credits were starting at the end. Which means they've seen it before, because you never go to a Marvel movie without sticking around through the whole credits. So many people have seen this movie. So many people watch these shows. In the United States, I think the estimate is 500,000 comic book readers, which is nothing.
Yeah. There's so many other options for entertainment, you know?
Well, yeah, but what I'm getting at is they're not 100%, they don't follow, the TV shows and the movies will go off in a different direction from the comics.
Yeah, so they're basically going, let's make what we think would be a good TV show instead. That's why I don't get, like, The Walking Dead following the comic books so closely.
That's because Walking Dead fans are like Star Trek fans and Star Wars fans. They are like, they're purists. They gotta have it exactly so.
Interesting.
Even Tony Isabella had pointed out one time, because somebody asked him, you know, would you be interested in writing a script for the Black Lightning TV show? And he had said that, yeah, there were pointed differences between the comic and the TV show, but that's not what's stopping him from writing a script. He's like, it would take me several years to write bad scripts before I could write a good script for this TV show. He knows there's a difference between the two, and if he knows there's a difference between the two, and if he's accepted that, then, you know, the fans should as well.
So when are we going to have Tony Isabella on this show?
I've reached out to him. He's super fucking busy.
He can call into the show. We've
he
done
has
that.
Never he can't he cannot get over how busy he is because of this show. He has to do appearances. He has
because
to
of the
photo
Don't
ops.
Panic Radio Show.
Right? Yes, because of the Don't Panic Radio Show. I'll reach out to him again and see if I can possibly arrange something. A couple of months ago, he had posted he can't do any more interviews. He's booked up so solidly. He just can't. And he's an older gentleman. He's got, you know, he can only do so much. So, but I will reach out to him again and see if I can get him to do a phone interview or something. As far as the show goes, it's leading up. I mean, it's on a rocket sled right now. I mean, It's a short season. I think we're in the home stretch for things coming to a head. It seems like everything is leading up to something. I can't wait for next week to find out what the hell happens next.
I love Tobias. I still love Tobias.
Tobias is great. He's not going anywhere. One of the things I love about this show is particularly the last episode that we just watched.
Yeah.
Without spoiling anything for anybody, i.e. your brother. This episode proved nobody is 100% guaranteed to be on next week's episode.
Well, that's yeah. I mean, I thought we were, yes.
Because when shit happened, I went, whoa.
So spoiler alert, Tobias, yes, does not get killed. But yeah. Some people that I thought, or at least someone I thought was, you know, going to be part of everything is, it's like, oh, okay. And I'm actually kind of like, yeah, I wasn't really that character. I really wasn't feeling it anyway. I wasn't really sure how that character fit in with everything.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, fine with me. Okay. So I was thinking about this while I was sitting on my deck today. I was like, the way that it went down, mm-hmm. and I know they're trying to frame our good friend, right? using those weird gun things, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so I remember thinking, that doesn't seem very realistic to me. And then I thought, this is a superhero show where a guy shoots electricity out of his fingers.
Yep.
Why am I having this? Doesn't seem realistic to me. Mm-hmm. Here's why. And it was like sort of an epiphany for me on the whole, why when I watch Star Trek, do I sometimes see things and go, well, that doesn't seem very realistic. It is in the universe that I've chosen to suspend my belief for.
Mm-hmm.
If that thing happens, what other things would I expect to be mm-hmm. happening, right?
Right.
And so when they pulled those guns out that, spoiler alert, shoot, you know, electricity that's similar to what Black Lightning shoots, I got uncomfortable and I thought, I don't know what's this about. And here's why.
Yeah.
If they have those, mm-hmm. why is this the first time we're seeing them? And why doesn't the military have them? And why doesn't, you know, why was it so easy? And these guys are just able to carry these things around. And I thought, if I were writing the TV show, mm-hmm. unless there's some other central theme that's going to change my thought on this, what I would have done is I would have had them wheel in some giant, heavy, awkward thing,
yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. I would have had them get the drop on these people and like hold them at gunpoint and say, stand right here for a second. And then mm-hmm. like wind this thing up with some giant battery or generator. And then like it would shoot the stuff, but it'd be a one shot deal. It'd be like totally impractical, right?
Right.
In this universe. Because right. the fact that they were so practical and so easy to use and so powerful makes me go, well, why doesn't everybody just have those? Right?
Well, my thing is give the show time to see if they explain that.
Mm-hmm.
Because this show doesn't just tell you the stuff and then it happens. It will put stuff in there. Like, why the fuck? Because I remember early on thinking, why the fuck is Tobias so goddamn strong?
Yeah.
Oh, then you find out later on. Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
I have 3 points. One is, before I forget, I'm still holding out for Gambi. I'm convinced he's playing both ends against the middle.
Mm.
Two, the younger sister is going to be pissed when her powers kick in, because she has powers too in the comic. Mm. When her powers kick in and she finds out that her dad and her sister are superheroes and no one's telling her, she's gonna be pissed.
Yeah. Well, they've already, even in the TV show, they've already alluded. They foreshadowed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
and her suspicion.
Tall glass of water. Mom already said, "What if what's her name has powers too?"
her suspicion of everything that's going on is foreshadow.
Yeah.
Now, while you're talking about that tall glass of water, my third point. Oh, my God. I have decided that Lynn Stewart is the sexiest woman on television right now.
Because she's funny?
Yes, she's funny.
Not fat.
Not fat. I watch each episode twice. This is my dedication for the show.
Mm-hmm.
The second time I watch it, whenever she talks, I'm just like, it's like the Wayne's World, you know, the with the sparkles and stuff. Every time she comes on the set, I'm just like, she's ridiculous. Nobody should be that beautiful, but goddamn, she's hot.
Yes. I'll tell you what, though. We got us a good show here. I think that we have achieved our goal, which is we've distracted everyone from the news of the day.
That's right.
Don't forget.
Such as it is.
Yeah. You can ignore the news. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Sit back and relax. Do not panic. Things are not what they seem. Go ahead and head on over to Apple Podcasts. Give us a rating. Stitcher, which I was trying to find our podcast on Stitcher the other day, and I couldn't find it. So I don't know. I got to go see if I did something wrong over there. Go to don'tpanicradioshow.com.
YouTube.
Go to YouTube/ Nothing You Heard Is True?
No, Don't Panic Radio Show.
Oh, YouTube/ Don't Panic Radio Show. There you go.
Hashtag put it on the page.
Hashtag put it on the page. Put your shit on our page. Tell your friends about the show. Share it on your Facebook page. Listen. But most importantly, for Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson, and nothing you just heard.
What's true?
Superfly, you're gonna make your fortune, bye bye. Wadata.